Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. I have a really good show for you this week, but first I want to give a shout to a very special Kickstarter. If you haven't already heard, James D'Amato and Kat Cool of the One Shot Podcast Network, and in this case Paracosm Press, have launched a Kickstarter to put out their first game, Noisy Person Cards. Noisy Person Cards, or NPC, is a party card game with the goal of helping you create better NPC voices for your games. You pair descriptor cards like charming or gelatinous with character cards like talking tree or kobold, and you use those combinations to read phrase cards in what you think those voices sound like. It's a really fun, silly good time, and you're improving your skills at the same time. There's more info as well as a free print and play version at paracosmpress.com.
May the great dragon tyrant bless you with his merciful wrath.
My interview today is with Anna Kreider, a talented designer with many varied games under her belt. I was curious to get her perspective on her recent experience in having to modify the meta of one of her games, specifically the approach to pitching it at conventions, and what that's been like. We also talk about several of her other games that were run at Dreamation, some of them hacks of other games, and all of them worth checking out. Let's get to it. Thank you again so much for hanging out with me this morning, this early, early morning. Anna, why don't you tell us a little bit briefly about yourself and some of the games that you've designed?
So my name is Anna Kreider. I'm a game designer, illustrator, and feminist games blogger. So that's a lot of different micro themes. worth mentioning, my blog is called Go Make Me a Sandwich. I've been doing game design since about 2008 when I published Thou Art But a Warrior was the first game that I published. It's a hack of Polaris set in the Reconquista era of Crusades. Since then, I've also designed the Starlet Kingdom. I also recently released Autonomy. I've also done a number of smaller and somewhat less serious projects like Sexy Time Adventures. But the big one that I'm working on right now is I'm co-designing a Powered by the Apocalypse with Andrew Medeiros, and it is called The Watch.
Awesome. I think when we first met at Dreamation, actually, I didn't realize that you were going to be running the game I was playing the next morning, but I vividly remember you talking about how much you enjoy making hacks.
Yes.
Of games, which is awesome. What's the draw? What's the allure?
So it's funny that, you know, like, I've never been able to really think in terms of original systems, in terms of I have a game and I'm going to completely invent something from scratch. It's much more like I tend to play a game and then I tend to think, oh, but like I could take this game and repurpose it and maybe Frankenstein bits of something else onto it. And then it would do this other thing. It's like totally cool. I mean, that's how I came up with my idea for Thou Art But a Warrior was, you know, like I was like, oh, but what if I used it to do the Crusades? And it, like, I just find it much easier to approach game design from that angle, especially because, especially now, like I'm a mom and I have a toddler. And so my free time is very limited. And so from a playtesting standpoint, I'd rather playtest something that I know at least is going to have a baseline level of functionality. And that I'm not wasting a ton of time kind of, okay, does this work? No, it's terrible. All right, yeah. How about now? No, it's still terrible.
Oh.
How about now? No, it's still terrible.
Yeah, that's playtesting.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of hacking, like I just have always found that easier and more accessible.
Cool. So it's easier from a like a design standpoint. Do you think it helps draw people in to playing the games? Like, oh, you've played this game, right? Well, let me tell you.
I definitely think it's an easier sell. You know, like certainly for The Watch, I can just say, oh, it's a Powered by the Apocalypse and here's what it is. And when you're talking to people who've played anything Powered by the Apocalypse, like they instantly know, they have a baseline expectation of, okay, like here's what the shape of the game is going to be and here's the sorts of things we're going to be doing. So yeah, it's definitely easier to try and describe to people in ways that they'll understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Is that identity of being a designer who works mostly, if not exclusively, in hacks, is that a difficult thing?
It's easier than it used to be. So, like, this is where I kind of go like, why am I there? But so when I started out with Thou Art But a Warrior, which again was a hack of Polaris, for 2 years after I published it, I argued with people when they called me a game designer, because hacking wasn't really seen as real game design by a lot of people. That wasn't a universal thing, but there were certainly a lot of people who didn't consider it to be like real game design. And I kind of internalized a lot of that and had difficulty thinking of myself as a game designer. That's kind of changed a lot, especially since, you know, you have games like Dungeon World was the first really big one. Mm-hmm. And then Blades in the Dark. And so anything that is a, you know, an Apocalypse World hack that makes that much money, people kind of can't argue with hacks being game design. But, you know, and this is something that I actually wrote about on my blog pretty recently. You kind of have this goalpost moving that happens where now people are saying, well, of course hacks are game design, which is kind of funny because these are the same people who used to say that, well, of course hacks aren't game design. Well, of course hacking is game design, but designing original systems is better. Which is frustrating because, you know, like I have seen people do some really interesting, innovative stuff with Powered by the Apocalypse, because the only thing that really is required for it to be Powered by the Apocalypse is, you know, roll two dice, add a stat, right? I mean, you can, there are people who have drifted, you know, what they're doing so far away from that baseline. Like Undying is a good example of like, that is actually technically Powered by the Apocalypse, even though it shares almost nothing in common. So, you know, in terms of like the creativity, like there's definitely people doing super interesting stuff using that as a baseline. And so I've gotten to the point where I no longer am insecure in myself about whether I call myself a game designer.
Good.
Just because hacking is my chosen medium. I don't feel like that makes what I do any less game design. But certainly there are other people who still have that kind of mental stigma.
Yeah. And just hearing you talk about it, it's not a connection that I made until just maybe a second ago, but I wonder if there's any correlation between, it seems like hacking games maybe gets some of the same reaction that people who write fan fiction get. You know, you're working in a system, you're not writing your own work, but it's still very good. It's still writing, and there's still a lot of really great work that comes out of that. And I'm just wondering if there's maybe, I know fan fiction gets a lot of flack because it's mostly women that write it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what we would find looking at who works in hacking games, who works in that space more. But
I kind of, and this is my entirely unscientific feeling, but I think there might be something to that because in terms of an entry point to game design, I feel like hacking has really, and things like Powered by the Apocalypse has really lowered the bar for, in terms of like removing barriers to entry.
Yeah.
In getting into game design. And that has meant that you are seeing more people who aren't white dudes.
Yeah.
Getting into game design. So it's one of those things where I have not thought of a way in which I would be able to gather numbers or test this hypothesis, but I think there might be something to that.
Yeah, I would be really curious. So if somebody out there wants to write a paper on this, let me know. I want to read it.
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be very interesting. Well, one of the games that you ran at Dreamation is the one that I played in that you ran at Dreamation is Starlit Kingdom, which is a hack of a hack.
Yes.
I guess before we get into too much how, like, what exactly Starlit Kingdom is, how have you been, I guess, marketing it, advertising it lately? Like, I don't have the Dreamation blurb open in front of me, but I know that there's some deliberate choices going on there with the way that you're talking about the game lately.
Sure, yeah. So, Starlit Kingdom, I hacked my own game, which is kind of ridiculous, but someone on Tumblr, I think their username is Inkless Pen. I don't know their real name, but they were like, oh, like, wouldn't it be awesome if you used Polaris to tell the story of the fall of the Silver Imperium from Sailor Moon? and I am a gigantic Sailor Moon nerd. And so as soon as I saw that post, I was like, oh my God, like, Thou Art But a Warrior would do that perfectly. I would have to change very few things in order to make this work. So it kind of lodged itself in my brain meats and would not go away. So it took me about a year to actually write it and protest it and all that stuff. And I don't know, I kind of had this idea that it, like, oh, come on, like, it's Sailor Moon. Like, how many people out there love Sailor Moon? Like, I know so many people who are just like, oh, Sailor Moon. Like, I was like, oh, I should at least make a decent amount of money off this. But what I found was that if I had even the faintest whiff of not even just Sailor Moon, just like Magical Girl, it was like the kiss of death.
Yeah.
No one wanted to play it at Gen Con. I only got to run one session of it. And that was after I had to like beg some people who were at loose ends to like play the game. Cause there was one person legit the whole convention who's like, oh, that looks interesting and I want to play it with you. So that was pretty frustrating. So what I did at Dreamation this year was I kind of, wrote my pitch such that I didn't mention magical girls or anything. I basically pitched it as space tragedy fantasy. Like, oh, you're playing people who are sworn to defend this, like, magical kingdom in space, and it's gonna get destroyed and be really sad. And that actually wound up being successful in that I had, so we had a mixed group. We had two women and two guys. Mm-hmm. And, especially the one guy afterwards said, yeah, if I had known this was a game about magical girls, I wouldn't have played. Which was hilarious because then when you came in, you just sat down and you were like, this is about Sailor Moon, isn't it?
I felt like I cracked the code reading this description that had no hint of magical girl or anything, but I think there's a subset of people who, if they read the phrase like moon queendom, they're just like, I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
I know what this is.
That did make me happy that, you know, I succeeded in writing something that didn't sound like Sailor Moon to people who didn't know Sailor Moon, but did sound like Sailor Moon to people who did.
It was great. I think that was actually part of the allure, because hearing other people talk about, oh, if I had known it was Magical Girls, I probably wouldn't have come. And I know that I have willingly signed up for games about Magical Girls before and had a great time. But there is, no matter how much I love Sailor Moon, I think if I had seen a description that was like, oh, you're going to be playing through the Sailor Moon story, I might have been like, oh, okay, maybe. Like, I'll see what else is in this slot, because, like, I know Sailor Moon. Maybe there's something else, or maybe it'll be, like, too light.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. Like, this game is not light at all.
No. And that's the thing, is, so the Starlight Kingdom is very purposefully set in something that they spend all of 8 pages in the first arc of the manga expanding.
Yeah.
But it's super bleak, the source material. It's, like, I read it when I was 14 and I just remember being like actually a little bit traumatized by like, wait, what? That's what happens? No, that's horrible. Oh my God. So I don't know. I guess people kind of have this idea that like, oh, magical girls, like it's just going to be like super fluffy or, you know, like not really hard hitting. But every game that I've played of it, has been really hard hitting and satisfying, and the ending has been intense and tragic and horrible.
Shit got real.
yeah. So it's a bit frustrating that I'm very proud of Starlight Kingdom as a game. But in terms of, you know, because I'm a full-time student, right now, and I'm kind of doing like blogging and freelancing and game design kind of crammed wherever I can fit it, I've kind of walked away from actively promoting Starlight Kingdom because, I can't, it just feels too hard trying to figure out a way to promote a game, you know, when one of the core concepts of the game are just make people feel like, oh, like, I'd rather not.
Yeah, that's gotta be really disheartening.
Yeah.
Yeah. The people that have gotten to play it, like, I know I heard some of the reactions at Dreamation. Was Dreamation the first time you started advertising it that way, in that more vague kind of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't get to do very many conventions, so getting to do Dreamation was kind of a last minute thing for me. There's a lot of years where Gen Con is the only convention I do, just because I live in Ontario and everything is far. There are no conventions that are close.
Oh.
So, you know, because of the travel issue, I don't get to do it. So Dreamation was just the first convention that I've done since Gen Con.
But of the people that you have been able to corral into playing this, what have the reactions generally been like?
Universally positive.
Cool.
And, you know, the one guy who said, well, I don't really do magical girl stuff. He's not the only person who has said that. Actually, the one guy who I begged to play my game at Gen Con Mm-hmm. You know, it was the guy that I actually had driven down to Gen Con with. And afterwards, he was like, yeah, like, I played it because you were really excited about running it, but, like, I wasn't expecting a whole lot. But that was really good!
Oh.
So, you know, it's definitely something where, I don't know, like, the subject matter seems really girly, I guess, but, like, I was, you know, the guys who have played it have really enjoyed it. It's definitely one of those games where as long as you're into the buy-in of, like, it's going to be tragic and everyone's going to die and it's going to be horrible. You know, because, like, some people are not up for that kind of, like, some people, they want happy endings, and that's cool. Like, I get that. But, like, for people who can find that kind of play, you know, playing to lose, basically, satisfying, the experiences have been universally positive.
I had a really good time. I hadn't actually played Polaris before, but I did pick it up while I was at Dreamation, because I was like, this is an interesting system. Mm-hmm. But I did appreciate that whole, you know, you're doomed, basically. What are you going to do until that happens?
And I feel like I should mention that Ben Lehman, the original designer of Polaris, has been incredibly generous, especially since Starlight Kingdom represents basically the third edition of this, you know, There But a Warrior that I've published and made money off of. That's his game. So he's been fantastic about the whole thing. And,
cool.
So just a shout out to Ben for being super great. Cause the first version of There But a Warrior was written for a setting design contest on the Forge when the Forge was still a thing. And Ben emailed me and the other people who had hacked Polaris and was like, if you want to publish what you wrote, like, you have my blessing. And so he,
oh, awesome.
Yeah. So Ben is kind of like one of the big reasons why I got into game design in the first place. So, yeah, just shout out to Ben for being awesome.
Yay. What a cool person. Mm-hmm. I'm extra happy now that I picked up Polaris. So that's Starlight Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And you've got another game that you were running at Dreamation, The Watch.
Yes.
Well, you had a couple other games I think you were running at Dreamation.
Yes. I ran one session of Autonomy, which is my LARP that basically, it's about getting men to have an embodied experience of sexism by reversing the gender script and gender socialization that we experience on a daily basis.
How did that go? I don't know if I ran into anybody who played that.
It was horrible in exactly the way that it needed to be.
Cool.
I know I'm not doing a good job of selling it.
For a traumatizing good time.
Yeah, no, I joke about it being like, oh, we sit around and, like, traumatize ourselves on purpose. It kind of is that, though, but I don't know, this sounds totally misandrist to say it, but I kind of think that, like, all men need to play it.
Yeah.
It's incredibly effective in what it does, but it's also very hard for me to run because, like, I kind of wrote it thinking, oh, like, you know, when I first had the idea, like, I thought it was funny. Like, I thought it was going to be a funny game. Like, oh, we can teach men to behave like women and then sit around and torture them for an hour. like, won't that be the funniest? But then what I discovered from writing and actually running the game is no. Abusing people the way that you've been abused just because you can is not a fun game. So, yeah. I mean, it was good that I ran it because the people who played it had a really positive experience. They had
a profound, maybe? Yes. Maybe not positive.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd call it positive. They thanked me for running it and said that it was an important experience for them, let's put it that way.
Cool.
And it was a useful kick in the pants because Autonomy had basically been done for a while, but I didn't really know what to do with it. So that was kind of the kick in the pants that I needed after Dreamation to just finish, like, actually polish up the layout and put it up on my website, pay what you want.
Cool. So that's available?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Awesome.
So it's called Autonomy. It's, I have it available through my Payhip storefront, which there are some pretty recent posts linking to it from, my Google Plus profile, which are public, so.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll have a lot of links in the show notes, I imagine.
Cool.
To these games.
But yeah, so that was one that I was there. Just Drew wasn't involved in that one, although he did play test it twice. So, and then Drew was GMing The Watch, which is the aforementioned, Powered by the Apocalypse that the two of us are writing together. He ran two sessions of it, and one of them that I got to play in and the other one that I didn't. And it went really well. People were really excited, and I'm really pleased.
Good.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I guess speaking of torturing men a little bit, what's The Watch about? What's the premise here?
So The Watch is basically, it's a low fantasy Powered by the Apocalypse setting where you're playing a group of all women soldiers, known as The Watch, who are defending your homeland from invasion by this nebulous threat called the Shadow. And the Shadow kind of invaded without warning. And when it first invaded, you know, your people had a co-ed, you know, like basically the clans of your homeland had a co-ed fighting force, but the men proved to be too vulnerable to possession by the Shadow. And so the Shadow just started taking over all the men. And, you know, you couldn't put up an adequate defense because, you know, you were not just fighting the Shadow's forces, but you were fighting your own people. Mm-hmm. So when the game takes place, your people have pulled back to a new border, dissolved the clans. So there's now, you're just all one people, and the men have been sent away from the front lines, and a new army has been formed that is called the Watch. And so the PCs are all soldiers in the Watch who are trying to fight and retake your homeland. So there's definitely a bunch of stuff we stole from Night Witches in that it is a military campaign that you play through with three phases. So the first phase is defense. So you're just defending the point that you've fallen back to. And then the second phase is preparation. So you're entrenched in your new position and now you're preparing to go on the offensive. And then the last phase is the offensive where you're eliminating the Shadow's forces from your homeland. And the cool thing about the Shadow that I'm just really excited that people have responded really well to is, you know, I say the Shadow is nebulous, but that's because the MC actually and the group decides what the Shadow is, what it wants, and what it does.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's different, it can look different depending on what direction you're interested in going in. So for instance, for what the Shadow is, one of the options is darkly sorceress, or it can be reality warping or subtle and hard to discern. So, you know, you kind of choose two out of a list of five for, you know, each of the what it is, what it wants, and then what it does. And you also kind of define like the Shadow servants and what they look like. You know, are they men hollowed out into automatons who never eat or sleep? Or are they cogs in a devastating machine of war? Or
spooky.
Yeah, it's been really cool seeing how people have responded to it.
Yeah, what kind of shadows do you get? Or what kind of, because I imagine people are sort of forming it to mirror maybe some of their own fears.
So we're just actually now post-cremation getting it out into other people's hands and letting them run it. So far, the only, you know, prior to that, it had just been Drew running it. And then our friend Aaron, who actually ran the very first two playtests of it. And I think both of them were defaulting to Darkly Sorcerers and Reality Warping, just because that's kind of how our home groups roll. But I'm excited to see what other people do with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room for fuckery there, as it were.
Absolutely. Yeah, I will, if we get to playing it, I will report back on our Shadow.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting. We had, the session that I played at Dreamation, we had, I was the only woman at the table, which did make me a bit nervous because I was like, oh God, like this game is just about, you know, like, you know, we're all playing women and, you know, like I was just worried that they would not be into the premise, but everyone at the table was like super, super into it, you know, and they just really took these characters and ran with them. And yeah, like, I guess I was just kind of afraid that there would be some eye rolling at the premise of like, oh sure, like the men are too weak, so we've banished them from the army for their own good or whatever. And, you know, but yeah, they really got into it and were really engaged with the premise. And afterwards, like everyone said, man, like I wish we didn't have to stop. Like I wish we could play some more Witch.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah, which is the best to hear. You know, because like this was basically the first time that we've brought it to anyone outside of our home groups. And you know, it's easy to run something from your home group and like run it the way you know that they are gonna like it, and then they, so when they say, oh, this is like so good, and then it's kind of like, okay, well, on some level it's like, yeah, but you're just saying that because we know how to run this in a way you like it, right?
Yeah, your friends are sometimes nicer. I'm still really shocked to hear that you were the only woman in that run of it, just because that's something I was curious about, is who does this description draw in, since it is women fighting as a team, they're just not shooting, like, wearing short skirts and doing friendship magic, so...
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the people were, like, one of them was Shane, who, you know, you know, the guys there were super into the premise. And so that was kind of a relief, especially after having run Starlet Kingdom and going like, okay, well, there's definitely some hashtag misandry going on in the watch that's mostly my influence anyway. But at least it's been dialed back enough that, you know, like we can get dudes interested in this game.
Yeah, that they enjoyed playing it. And that is so cool. So, you know, you described the phases of the game, and it sounds very much like, you know, you're fighting this darkness. But my impression is that sort of the fighting isn't really the focus of this game.
Yeah. You know, again, it's very inspired by Night Witches in that there's two distinct phases of the game. So there's the missions that you go out on, you know, like defend a fort or protect a supply caravan. And when you complete those, you get rewards. But then there's also the aftermath of, you know, you come back from the mission and, you know, you're trying to deal with the consequences of everything that's gone wrong while on the mission and deal with the fallout of that once you've gotten back to camp. And then there's also the issue of just because the clans got dissolved doesn't mean that, like, bullshit clan politics aren't still a thing. So that's one of the things that we're still actively playtesting is trying to make sure that the materials we have encourages the right mix of that sort of situation. But it's definitely like not just, you know, recuperating from fallout from the mission, but also NPCs back at camp who want to drag you back into stupid clan politics and that kind of thing. And that is kind of what allows the shadow, that avenue to creep in and influence people, you know, even the women who are fighting against it, right?
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, so that infighting absolutely leads to vulnerabilities. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I've heard talk about it, I feel like talk mostly about the parts where you are dealing with the aftermath and that sort of after the fighting, you know, the moves that you have and the things that you can do are very, it's only been men that I've heard talk about it, of course, because that's who played at Dreamation. So they characterize it as very like feminine, like they felt like they were playing female characters for whatever that's worth. And I guess that's part of the way those moves work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I gotta hand it to Drew. Drew is the one who wrote all of the basic moves. You know, I kind of participated a bit more in the playbooks, although he did the writing for all those, but he was the one who wrote all of the basic moves. And they're really great. You know, I just really like how, you know, one of them is like blow off steam, where, you know, if you find a way to blow off steam with someone, it's a way to like build camaraderie with someone, which is an in-game resource that you can use to do stuff and get bonuses to help people and whatever. You can also lower your weariness and that sort of thing. But then there's also like my favorite move in the game is open up to someone. And the stat that it's tied to is valor, because it's actually takes a lot of bravery to lower your barriers with someone and kind of be open about how you're feeling. And like that just right there is, I love that move so much.
Do you find that the people like play that out?
Oh,
when
yeah.
They're doing those moves? Like how does that look?
It was really funny because that session at Dreamation, I mean, like the guys who were playing were just, oh yeah, like open up to someone. Like this is great. And so when they got back to the camp, you know, there were two of the characters that were actually married to each other.
Oh.
And yeah, that was really cool.
That's cool.
And so the one of them was playing, so all of our archetypes are also kind of a Night Witches thing. They're named after predators. So the character playing the wolf kind of had this like, no, I want to protect my wife by being like super, like I want to protect her from when I'm feeling bad about stuff. But there was this great scene where the Bolts player was just like, yeah, like I'm gonna be honest about, you know, like how I feel after this mission that went really badly and like all this stuff. It was a really great scene. But yeah, so there people have really like, you know, that whole thing of because, you know, like, oh, open up to someone with valor, like yeah, they just really get into it. It's really cool to see.
Awesome. Yeah, you've named the characters after predators, which I thought was really cool. And then I'm scrolling through like I can't see things like lioness and wolf without thinking like I'm going to go on a cool Tamara Pierce adventure.
I have to admit, I have friends who are super into Tamara Pierce. I have not read Tamara Pierce myself.
It's cool. Some of the early ones definitely still read like they were written in the 80s, but I love it for that.
Yeah, I really like the names of the archetypes. I think they're really evocative. The playbook I'm most excited about is the spider. Drew wrote this amazing, horribly creepy, evil cleric. well, maybe not evil, but, you know, the person that you need to keep around, but mm-hmm. also, like, a lot of their playbook involves intentionally letting the shadow in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, some of the moves that they get, or there's a move called Step Into My Parlor, right? It's pretty great. Oh, so.
That's so good. And so if the shadow then, you know, wins or makes advances, did they get benefit from that?
No, it's...
Like, not directly?
Yeah, I mean, it's... Letting the shadow in is still something that harms them.
Okay.
But, you know, in terms of... They kind of have a, like, open your brain equivalent that no one else gets.
Mm.
But how they do that is they let the shadow in and kind of are accessing the shadow's knowledge. And if you roll well, then, you know, yay! You can close the door again and keep it out, but if you don't roll well, then basically once you let it in, you can't, you know, you can't get rid of it quite so easily, and then things go bad.
Yeah. Oh.
It's really delightful. I think every group that's played it so far has had a spider in it, even if there's not enough people to have necessarily every playbook in play. It's definitely one of the good ones. Well, I don't know. They're all good ones, right? It depends on what you like playing.
Mm-hmm. There's something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you've compared it a couple times to Night Witches, and I know the folks that I've talked to make that comparison as well, but how is the Watch different from Night Witches? What do you think it does or accomplishes that's different?
So definitely in terms of missions, the complications are still a thing, but the overall level of lethality of the missions has been tuned way down because we want characters to have a decent shot of surviving all the way through. But there's also, like, there's stuff that, you know, this isn't just a pure hack of Night Witches, because there's also stuff like, so your characters have both weary and, which is something that, you know, if you max out on your weary, you have to make a roll called Surrender to Weariness.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the harm move, and then if you roll high, that's very bad. And if you roll a hit on your Surrender to Weary, you actually wind up completely erasing your camaraderie with someone, and then losing a point of camaraderie with everyone else, because you basically have a meltdown and lash out at someone and really damage your relationship and then have to spend time building that back up. But the other thing that you accumulate is jaded, but jaded is just straight up corruption from Urban Shadows. So jaded actually gets you access to, it's a separate advancement track, it gets you access to jaded moves, but once you hit your fifth jaded advance, that's when you stop being a PC, you walk away. You've had enough of the war and refuse to go on in your character.
Ooh.
So yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a straight up Night Witches hack. I mean, there's kind of stuff, like bits and pieces that we're taking from a lot of different things. But then, like, the shadow especially is, you know, that's the stuff that feels new and original in terms of how we broke it out, in terms of, well, here's your threat and here's how you can kind of go through and create a shadow that feels threatening and compelling to your group, and, you know, that sort of thing. It's funny, Drew says that he actually really hates Fronts and Threats. He usually does not tend to default to using them when he's emceeing anything powered by the apocalypse, but the Fronts and Threats that we wrote together as part of the shadow, these are really good. I'm actually using these.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What kind of Fronts and Threats?
I mean, you have the shadow and then kind of the four different factions. Or you have the traditionalists, who are members of the people who want to bring back the old ways.
Okay.
You have the extremists, the people who want to defeat the shadow, but who want to do anything, like literally anything, to defeat it. So they'll go to monstrous lengths.
Mm-hmm.
You have the people who, you know, are not members of the Watch, and so they just want everything to go back to normal and complain about how terrible everything is. And then, of course, you've got the Agents of Shadow, and each of them kind of have their own impulses and moves, and they're pretty exciting.
Nice. So among the people, do you actually ever run into any male NPCs in the game?
It's not something that has come up, and again, that's actually something that we're kind of trying to tune right now, because it's definitely something that I wanted to be a thing where, you know, you kind of have men who are on the home front where the women are away fighting, and it's very much like a reversal of the situation from what they've experienced. And I wanted it to be a thing where you would have to, you know, occasionally encounter these men who would throw that resentment in the faces of the PCs. Not something that we've kind of gotten to see yet. Most of the playtests have been centered in and around the camp, which doesn't have dudes. And, you know, like, that's something I'm kind of wrestling with, because I want this to be a game that focuses on women and, well, not just women, but really, like, focuses on the stories of, you know, heroic female and trans and other non-binary protagonists. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like I also do want to get some of that in there. But if one of those things has to be sacrificed, then I'm totally okay with, say, you know, like, I don't know. Guys get, like, literally every other role-playing game out there. So, well, maybe not every other, but, like, you know.
But, yeah.
A lot.
I'd be curious to see the game that has the male NPC who disguises himself as a woman to join the fighting force, and it just does not end well for him. Every story that we see of the girl who disguises herself, like, she does all right, you know? She gets there. She works her way to the top, and this poor guy just, nope, it's not going to work that way. That's not how this story goes.
That would be an interesting idea for an NPC. Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of how we've written how the shadow works and mm-hmm. you know, there's just something about the idea of man or maleness that just makes men too susceptible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like he's not going to get very far in this in this gambit.
No.
So unlike Starlight Kingdom, is there room at all for a happy ending?
That's the goal. The campaign, I mean, you have a pre-written mission structure, but I mean, the very last mission is invade the Shadow Stronghold, after which point you initiate the end of the game. So it was important to me that we're dealing with some fantasy analogs of some real life stuff here, but I didn't want it to just be like, okay, well, there's no way you can win. Everything's just going to be horrible and depressing, the end. Because especially since it's fantasy, it's like, well, no, if it's fantasy, then let's have it actually be possible to defeat this threat. The question is going to be very much, how much are you willing to sacrifice to stay in it the whole time and to achieve your goal? You know, because by the time, you know, you get to that point, like, are you willing to, like, I mean, since Jaded is just straight up corruption, I mean, are you willing to forego opportunities to pick up Jaded that will get you more powerful moves in the name of not burning out so that you can still be there at the end? Or are you going to burn bright and fast and not be there to see the end of the campaign? Or
yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So
sure, anytime.
So Drew is running a campaign of it for a group locally, and they've said that they want to play through the whole thing. So I think that he just finished up. He either just finished phase two or just started phase three. He ran back-to-back sessions, so I haven't gotten a chance to talk to him and see where he's at. But so we haven't really had a group get through, like, the whole number of sessions, because it is a little bit like Night Witches in that, like, it's like two missions. Mm-hmm. A session is pretty average. And there's, like, what do we got here? First phase is five missions, and then the phase two and three are six. So
gotcha. Yeah. So that's a couple weeks of.
It's definitely a medium format game in that it's going to take a good number of sessions to get through.
That'll be cool. Are you guys planning on sharing kind of what happens with this campaign?
Maybe,
I mean, even informally, sort of.
You know, honestly, like, that would be up to Drew. He's kind of just, I mean, I haven't even been getting detailed write-ups. He's just telling me amusing anecdotes, like, about his, cool. He, the player of the spider. Oh my God. I'm to the point where, like, I asked Drew, like, oh, did Janet do anything crazy? like the other night? Cause, like, at one point she got captured by the Shadow's forces and then, forced to cook for them. even though they don't eat, like, it was,
oh, you know,
like, but that's what he selected for what they are and what they do. They don't eat. It was just totally like a statement of power. And so when she escaped, she wound up drowning her captor in a bowl of stew that she'd made. Right?
Oh, that's so good.
I know. So I was just like, oh my God. So yeah, I don't, that'll kind of be up to Drew how much he shares. But
cool. I hope he does. These adventures sound really good.
Yeah.
I think it might help people too, kind of, to have a sense of how a whole play, how it goes, and how it ends up.
Yeah, and that's definitely the sort of, like, example that we'll, you know, when we do get to the point of actually writing a book, like, that's the sort of stuff that we would include in the book as an example for people to kind of know, like, okay, so here's what the fiction is going to end up looking like.
Here's what Janet did.
Yeah, right? I'd be like, okay, Janet, so I'm just going to take notes of, like, all the crazy shit, and that's going to be the, no. But yeah, definitely probably a couple things we'll make it as examples. Especially this dude, because that's just amazing.
That is too good. Anything else that we should know about the watch?
So it's currently, we've opened it up for some more limited external playtesting. I mean, like I mentioned, there's stuff that we're working on actively trying to tune that isn't quite doing what we wanted it to do. We're hoping that by around Gen Con, we would have enough data that we would be able to open up playtesting more generally, but mm-hmm. it's just a bit hard to promise timelines since, you know, Drew's got a day job and I'm a full-time student. And so we're busy people but yeah, so I mean, following either one of us or, you know, ideally both of us on Google Plus is just a good way to keep an eye because we'll be posting updates and whatnot as to where we're at with the testing.
Perfect. And so other than Google Plus, is there any place people can find you or your games online?
So my website it's browserbeware.com. So mm-hmm. browser, the software, beware.com. And that's where you can find links to all of my games. And Drew does not have a website, but his current claim to fame is, he's the co-designer of Urban Shadows and he has a Kickstarter that is finishing tomorrow evening, The Forgotten. And that is a card-based LARP that they're playing Survivors of the Siege of Sarajevo. Really excellent. It's going to be available through Drive-Thru Cards after the Kickstarter wraps up.
Cool. Yeah, this will definitely be out after that. So we'll
we'll
link to the where it's available now in the future when you're listening to this.
And I am also on Twitter at @WunderGeek, WUNDERGEEK. Although that tends to be just as much yelling about feminism as it is about actual like what I'm doing. So if you're not as interested in that stuff, then Google Plus is the way to go.
Cool. Well, thank you again. It's been really, really fun.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Thanks again to Anna for spending an early morning talking about games with me. You can find her games at browserbeware.com and her blog at gomakemeasandwich.com. There are links to both her and Andrew's G+ pages in the show notes. I really enjoyed Starlit Kingdom, and in editing this interview, I feel like we just start to touch on a lot of important discussion points about hacking and fan works and what convention game pitches do and don't do well in preparing us about what to expect emotionally from games. It's an area I'm interested to explore further, and I hope this look at Anna's experience has been interesting for you too. Starlit Kingdom was a much deeper, fuller, expansive experience than I'd anticipated, so if you like thoughtful narrative games, I encourage you to give it a try if you ever have the opportunity. Since this was recorded, I've also had the pleasure of playing The Watch with a group of gaming friends. It was enjoyable and similarly thoughtful in its approach to narrative play, and I think it's interesting to note that I also played with a group of all men, and as we created the enemy together, it was really awesome to have the structure to help me say, this element is particularly scary, and here's why, and for them to immediately be able to go, oh, yeah, it is, was really cool. That kind of dynamic is really going to vary from group to group, but I think that it's a great, enjoyable fighting game that seamlessly builds in ways to have some really good conversations about the way all of us experience negative patriarchal effects here in reality. Keep an eye out for The Watch news and playtesting opportunities through Anna and Andrew's G+ pages. In other news, I'll be playing two games this weekend that you may still have the opportunity to experience or participate in, depending on when you hear this and your location. On Saturday, April 23rd at noon Eastern, I'll be playing another game on Eric Vulgaris' Twitch channel. This time it's The Quiet Year, which I still haven't played yet, so I'm really looking forward to it. Eric and I will be joined by PK Sullivan, whom you may remember from episode 5, about his game Heroes Fall. On Sunday, April 24th, I have the pleasure of helping to facilitate a LARP in New York City, Brooklyn actually, called the Hades Holiday Party. It's put on by Game and a Curry, and participants will be employees of hell, each assigned to a different department and enjoying that unique corporate stress that is a holiday party. I'll be heading up the Envy department, so if you're in the area, the event link will be in the show notes with any remaining ticket information. Lastly, I was on a podcast this week from Riverhouse Games, specifically their From Scratch series. I got to spend a good amount of time talking to Taylor about all the games I've been playing this year, so if you're interested in that at all, I'll have a link to that one too. We also played One Missed Call and had a lot of feelings about games. That's all the housekeeping I have for you this time, heroes. You can find Modifier on Twitter at @ModifierPodcast or check out the headquarters at modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. Feel free to reach out over email with questions, comments, or contribution suggestions to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. Modifier is proud to be part of the One Shot Podcast Network, a family of RPG podcasts that includes shows like One Shot, Campaign, Backstory, and Talking Tabletop. You can find out more at oneshotpodcast.com. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. See you next time, heroes.